Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael. Kane's Tire has always had the lowest prices in Marin for 54 years. Today's guest from San Francisco, Jorge Ortiz from USA Today, literally on the streets of San Francisco today. Jorge, as the Giants are back home and taking on the San Diego Padres, and for the Giants, you know, it's a tough road here down the stretch because they're 8.5 back, not that many games left. They need the Dodgers pretty much to lose every day, and they have to win every day. And, you know, for the Giants, I have never appreciated Cal Ripken more than now, because I can't believe he played all those games in a row when you consider all the injuries the Giants have had this year.
Yeah, particularly the one to Hunter Pence has been a killer. You know, they're 34-17 when Hunter Pence starts a game. They're way under 500 when he doesn't play. And his absence for such an extended time and then three different stints on the DL has just been brutal for them. And then, you know, there's been an accumulation. You know, they've lost Angel Pagan for quite a while. They lost Nori Aoki. You know, the rotation has been riddled with problems, and Matt Cain hasn't been his old self. I mean, there's a lot of factors that are health-related that have really contributed to their demise this year. Or maybe not demise because they're over 500, but their significant downturn.
There have been some positive stories. I mean, Kelby Tomlinson stepped in nicely at second base. And I'm not going to say the Giants didn't miss a beat without panic, because he looked like he was on his way to a great year. And now it's kind of a scary situation for Joe, because he came back and now his back's bothering him again. So for a guy who's that young, isn't this unusual to have this kind of a back injury? And do you think the Giants are privately a little bit scared about this?
Yeah, I would think so. Yes. As somebody who has endured back problems, I can tell you that you can manage them, but they don't totally go away. And it is rare to have a young player have to deal with back issues. And you wonder whether this is something that's going to endure for the rest of his career. So it's been great to have Tomlinson step in and contribute the way he has. But Joe Panik's an all-star. You know, you don't replace a guy like that so easily. And he can do so many things. He's very good defensively. He stands in there in the double play. You know, the lefty hitter and the, you know, the number two spot in the lineup, who's the consummate hitter for that spot. So it was a big loss when he was out, and definitely there's some concern about the back issues. It's not like a hamstring that you pull and eventually it you know, it heals, but it's not like like a groin injury. This is something that would be concerning for sure.
Yeah, you know, for a while the Giants had the best offense in the league. They were leading the league in runs scored. I mean, when they had everybody healthy, when you had Aoki in there, and you mentioned players that were out, like Pagan, and we've mentioned Panic. I mean, when you had everybody in there, which was pretty rare this year, but when you did, and Pence was going, this team looked like it was ready to be right at the top with the Dodgers, and they still hung in there. It's amazing how that one series in L.A. just kind of destroyed them, because they were there. Were you even surprised the Giants could contend that long?
I was, because of the extent of the injuries and because their rotation has been shaky beyond Madison Bumgarner all year long. And, you know, they got a nice lift from Chris Heston, but that leveled out. So, you know, the length of the season eventually brings out the real contenders and really good teams, because it goes beyond what you can do during a stretch of a month or two. You know, it's just such a tremendous grind, and you need that depth. And, you know, the Giants, when it comes to their rotation, they were relying on depth, but not a whole lot of quality and not a lot of certainty with guys like, you know, Kane coming back from the elbow problem, and Jake Peavy, who has a history of injuries. And so when you're going with that, and then, you know, when you combine it with the injuries to players that you expect to be out there every day, like Pence and Panic, you know, it's just a death blow. But it was interesting to me that offense clicked so well. You were grown used to over the years to having a team that relies mostly on his pitching and manufacture, you know, and run here and there just to scratch out, you know, one of those torture wins. And it turns out this year the plan they had to replace the offense that left with Sandoval, less as a free agent, and with Morse also departed. Their plan was quite effective. They didn't bring in a big slugger to step in for those guys. Instead, they signed Aoki, and that top of the lineup ended up working really well. And then the emergence of Matt Duffy lengthened the lineup, and suddenly you had a team that, as Bruce Bochy likes to say, just kept their line going. And they were very effective at producing runs with those guys at the top and the middle of the lineup with Pence and Posey and Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford having a terrific year. But it just doesn't work when most of those guys or a good chunk of those guys are not available.
We'll have more with Jorge Ortiz from USA Today right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark McElhone at Kane's Tire in Santa Fe. If you want the lowest prices in Marin and the best service, call us at 453-2942. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street, where our prices beat Costco's prices every time.
Since you mentioned Duffy, you wrote a story about him in USA Today, and it was really interesting. And I love Duffy's approach, and a lot of credit has to go to Benny Craig, who many Giants fans maybe never heard of, but he helped him out in the Cape Cod League. In your story, you were talking about how Duffy was taught to stand a little bit further away from the plate. He developed that leg kick. His approach of going the other way is just amazing. And what did you think about when you were doing that story, how Duffy was able to develop like that? Because, he's not a guy that's big and that you look at and say, oh, yeah, that guy's going to be your number three hitter in the lineup. But he's really had a great year. In fact, you were even trumpeting him for Rookie of the Year because his numbers are really good.
They have been. And he's tailed off a little bit of late. I think he's worn down. That was one of the questions about him with his physique, whether he would be able to continue playing every day. And I think the toll of the season has been reflected a little bit, but he's still kept his average right around 300. He has been extremely productive, very smart approach, as you mentioned. I think Chris Bryant will clearly win the NL and Rookie of the Year award, but Duffy will be in the discussion. And more significant than that, he's now put himself in place where he's going to be their third baseman of the future, because even after he started doing very well the first month or so, the Giants were still kind of looking for a more permanent answer at third base, and suddenly they went, oh, wait a second, we have that answer here. And, Bobby Evans told me, hey, he's our third baseman for now and in the foreseeable future. So he's really made himself into a terrific player. He developed defensively at third base to where he was much more consistent and knew what to expect and came in very well on the ground there. So he really worked to become a better player. But the part that blew me away was that he wasn't that good a hitter in college. He didn't hit a single home run in his 3 years at Long Beach State.
Right.
And now he's got, I think, 10 or 11 home runs in this season. He's driven in more than 60 runs. And he's been a consistent producer. So, working with a hitting coach and then, using some of his own ability. He is a good athlete. And so, he takes advantage of his speed and then just put it into work. As, Benny Craig said, it's appropriate that he plays for Long Beach State because their kind of a secondary nickname is the dirtbag. And he said, he's a dirtbag. He's a guy who gets down and dirty and he works.
I interviewed him a few times this year, and Duffy attributes some of his success to reading this book by Harvey Dorfman about the mental keys to hitting. And a lot of major league players, refer to Harvey Dorfman, and they may not talk about it publicly, but Duffy does, and that you can only control so much. How much do you think that helps Duffy, just being aware of the mental part of the game, realizing that, hey, you've got to think about this, and reading a book, taking that much interest in it?
Oh, I think it's huge because that's what can separate you from a mediocre player. You'll have some abilities, but this is such a mental game. It's a game that you're constantly seeking a little edge here and there that can take you over the top. And for him, that's one of the real tools to get him there. He's read the book about 10 times. He has it highlighted, and he all sorts of passages that he's pointed out are particularly effective. And then when he's struggling, he goes back to it. and he might talk to Benny Craig a little bit. So all those things are part of what, you know, would make you an effective major leaguer. And I think they have been really huge for him. To me, it's also interesting that, you know, he is so different from Pablo Sandoval, the guy
right.
You know, he replaced, because, you know, he's got a weight problem, but the other way around, like, he can't keep the weight on. And, you know, like, over the offseason, he would set an alarm to remind himself to eat something every hour. So, you know, he would try to gain some weight and get stronger. So, you know, and his is a much more low-key personality than Pablo's. And, you know, I think we all enjoyed watching the Panda over the 70 years he was in San Francisco, but my God, that was the best money the Giants ever spent. You know, not a $95 million contract the Red Sox are now stuck with. And Sandoval's had a miserable year. And you know, Duffy's come off, you know, with a very nice rookie season that projects him as a permanent third baseman.
Yeah, his metabolism, I guess, is really fast. Duffy is so skinny. Maybe he shouldn't feed his cat Skeeter so much. He should be eating the food. But no, you're right. I mean, that's quite a parallel when you think about the contrast of weight. And the schedule did come out, and the Red Sox are coming to Fenway next year. So if Panda is still with the Red Sox, you can only imagine the reaction at AT&T Park. That's going to be one to circle on your calendar.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think people noticed that right away when this schedule came out. I would imagine he would get kind of a mixed reaction, mostly positive, but definitely there would be some boos in there. The comments Pablo made after leaving did not sit well with people here, and you know, he had a beef with the team's management as far as you know, the contract negotiations. And I think people eventually will look past that because his time here was so successful, and he was one of the very few, well, position players. I think there were only two who were there for the whole, all three championships, him and Buster Posey. There were several pitchers who were also around for the whole ride. But he was a big factor in the postseason. He was beloved. He was colorful. But, you know, they left. I think they kind of mend their fences, but they didn't leave it in the best of terms. And more than that, you know, he just hasn't been the kind of player in Boston that he was here. And when you're able to find a cheap replacement like Duffy has been, I think people have been going like, wow, this is one thing. Amid all the injuries, that really went well for the Giants this year.
We'll continue the conversation with Jorge Ortiz from USA Today after this. It was time for a new pair of snow skis. And I couldn't be happier with my decision to buy them at Demosport, where the experience was great. And I found out that they not only have skis, but they have snowboards and snow apparel. And for the summer, get ready with water skis, wakeboards, stand-up paddleboards, and all of your land sports needs like bikes, scooters, and you can even get sunglasses there. Demosport, 1101 Francisco Boulevard in San Rafael. Call them at 415-454-3500. Demosport, committed to getting you the gear you need. One player who will never get booed by the AT&T crowd is Tim Lincecum, and he just had his hip surgery, and who knows if he'll be back with the Giants or not, and who knows how effective he will be. I know Chris Lincecum, his dad, Timmy's dad, talked to John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle and was quoted as saying that, you know, he expects Tim to come back better and stronger and all of that. But you wrote a story recently about Lincecum and his popularity in good times and bad. And that certainly is unique because, you know, he had the Cy Young Awards. He's thrown a couple of no-hitters. He's won three World Series. But there have been some tough times in recent years. He started out this year really well, but then he wasn't pitching as well again. And I don't recall ever hearing him getting booed. He always has the backing of the fans, doesn't he?
He certainly does. And, you know, he had the quirky personality, or still has, just hasn't been playing. But, you know, that personality that just suited San Francisco so well. This is a guy who would be introspective, particularly when things were not going well. He would pour his heart out. You know, he had the marijuana citation. He had, you know, the on that comment that he made.
Right.
But after they won the first division title, you know, it just, it's different kind of guys, different athletes, so athletic, you know, an acrobat on the mound and small. So there were so many factors that made him an endearing figure. And then the phenomenal success was, you know, he helped usher in this era of San Francisco, golden era of San Francisco baseball. And he was the first significant figure to start heading the game in that the team in that direction after the joyless Barry Bonds year. You know, those last few years of Barry Bonds' tenure in San Francisco were absolutely miserable. You know, they were all about the home run record. The team was terrible, and you know, certainly superstar. And suddenly, this quirky, unusual guy comes out. Throwing 97 mile per hour fastball out of this smallest frame with this unorthodox windup, and you're like, who the hell is this? He became known as the Freak, and it's a very appropriate nickname. You know, what he was doing was totally freakish. A lot of people figured it probably was not sustainable. We don't know how much of that downturn in his career had to do with the hip issues. You know, we hadn't heard anything about him having any hip problems until this year. It would seem to kind of explain why a guy at age 27, 28 started losing it, because, you know, Lincecum hasn't been a good pitcher for four seasons now, and he's 31. And so he just went downhill in a hurry. But, you know, the fact that he was so outstanding in that first playoff, in that first full season, 2010, when they won their first World Series in San Francisco, the fact that in the second postseason run, he pitched out of the bullpen without any complaints, and he was outstanding. And then, last year, he hardly pitched at all in the postseason. You never heard him bitch and whine. You know, they're the kind of things that make an enduring legacy as a player who went beyond what he did on the mound and really cemented himself as a beloved figure in the fans' minds, probably forever. Even if he never pitches again here, or even if he never regains that glory that he had.
And there's always that positive influence in the clubhouse that you seem to get from him, an infectious personality. I think as far as you want good clubhouse chemistry, and he would give you that. I remember, I'm always going to remember him pointing at players when they would make a good play in the field. Now, on the other side of that, you recently talked to Yasiel Puig with the Dodgers, and he's been out, yet the Dodgers are playing really good baseball without him. And I wonder about his personality. A lot is made about the Dodgers clubhouse, and there was talk about maybe they were going to trade Puig. What did you get from talking to him? I mean, I know he's had injuries, so he's got to be kind of frustrated with what's been going on this season.
Yeah, he certainly has not shown the best side of him to the media, let's put it that way. And even to those of us who can talk to him directly and in his native language, he has made no effort to show the lighter side of his personality. I do see that sometimes in his interaction with teammates in the clubhouse. He can be a playful and engaging guy, but he can also be a pain in the arse. And I think there are some people who believe that one of the reasons the Dodgers have clicked so well and not only swept the Giants in that series in L.A., but also continued on a rampage where they have pretty much put away the division, has to do with the fact that he has been hurt. He's been away, and they don't have to deal with him. Andre Ethier is getting a lot more playing time. Todd Crawford's come back and contributed. Scott Van Zwijk could get a chance to play. And, the team doesn't have to rely on him. I think part of what happened with Puig was that when he came up in June a couple of years ago, he ignited that team. You know, that was a team that was going nowhere. It was floundering badly. He took off. You know, he had a huge month, and the team suddenly turned around. And at one point, they won 48 out of 50 games. They ended up winning the division 2013. And so it became all about Puig. And, the marketing around him, the fans were crazy about him. So I think it was too much for a guy who was just a couple of years out of Cuba, a couple of years out of a totally repressive system, coming into this country, and suddenly the whole baseball world is singing his praises, and it got to his head. Not to mention that, you know, Puig has had some issues while he was in Cuba. He wasn't like a choir boy while he was there. and so I think he already had the wrong makeup for a guy who was going to run into a huge amount of success and a huge amount of adulation. I think he was too immature to handle it.
As we finish up here, we're talking on September the 11th. So anytime you look at the calendar and you see 9/11, there are definitely some strong emotions, very strong memories that come to mind. And when you think about baseball and 9/11, I mean, that was the year Seattle won 116 games. The Diamondbacks beat the Yankees in the World Series in seven games. There was a lot going on that year. Barry Bonds hit 73 home runs. That all happened in 2001. But the one that really comes to mind for me, Jorge, and I don't know where you stand on your memories, but the Mike Piazza home run, I remember getting chills watching that because baseball was back. He hit that home run and really played a big role in helping the city of New York heal. What are your vivid memories from 9/11?
You know, it's interesting because my recollections have absolutely nothing to do with baseball, because I was out on a sabbatical in Barcelona with my wife at that time.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, which was absolutely tremendous. So we took 6 months off and lived in Barcelona. And that happened to be a holiday there. And we had gone out on a long walk. And we stopped at a cafe. And the TV set was on. And we see, like, you know, the replay of this building coming down. And we're like, what kind of strange movie is this? And, you know, the volume was off, so we didn't really know what was going on. And then as we watched more, the realization hit us, and then the second building came down. Oh. And it was just, you know, such a huge catastrophe. You could really, you struggled to put your arms around it and really comprehend it. So it was an unusual place to experience that. You know, you felt like you're so helpless because your home country is getting invaded and you're thousands of miles away. So I miss, you know, the Piazza home run and the Yankees and the D-backs in that great World Series and all that, the Bonds home run pursuit, which would have been glorious here in the Bay Area, except for a few years later we found out that it was totally tainted. So my memories go back to Barcelona, and you know the strange feeling of being, an American in a different country when your home country is invaded, and just a very, very odd kind of feeling, very helpless.
Yeah, very different perspective. By the way, we've seen Barry Bonds at the ballpark lately. He looks a lot thinner. He's around the team. Do you think that he'll have a role with the Giants or more of a role? I know he's appeared at spring training. What do you foresee with Bonds?
You know, they have had conversations about that. And now that he has finally been cleared of all the charges, you think maybe something would happen. I don't know how much his personality has changed. And, you know, the team certainly doesn't need him now. And I know for years and years, they put up with him because right. of what he did. But it's not like the team absolutely loved him. And, you know, it was a very different relationship than with Lincecum, you know, who I think the Giants will probably try to find a way to bring Lincecum back in a good contract or something. You know, I don't think they're totally cutting off the cord. Whereas with Bonds, once they, you know, and it was the Giants who turned their back on him and said, okay, we don't want to deal with you anymore, even though he still has some good baseball left. So I think some of those feelings have gotten smoothed over, you know, through the years, but I don't know that I would expect him to have a permanent, you know, role on the team, just because I think he grates people. And you're right. You see him at the ballpark. He looks tremendous for a guy who's 50. He's absolutely fantastic shape. He does a lot of biking. You know, it seems like the size of his head has shrunk back to normal. Whether the Giants would find a more permanent role for him, I think would be kind of curious to to see what, if they do that, and exactly what role would that be? Because I don't think he would want to be a permanent hitting coach. I think a lot of people believe that he would probably be good at that because he relates to hitters and he has just a vast reservoir of hitting knowledge. He was a brilliant hitter, not just a slugger. But would they want him around every day? I wonder about that. I question it.
I know. I agree with you there. Jorge, thanks so much for putting up with me on this podcast. And look forward to seeing you at the ballpark really soon.
All right, Joe. It was fun talking to you.
That's Jorge Ortiz from USA Today. We'll be back again on Tuesday from AT&T Park in San Francisco as the Giants are taking on the Cincinnati Reds. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.